tied at 40.
Hear local high school sports on your phone by going to the App Store and downloading the free WGTV app. WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD.
Hi, I'm Bob Tenuta of the Gateway Radio Reading Service. We volunteers read the local newspapers to the visually impaired over the radio. Would you like to do the same and not having to move one toe out of your home? Call me at 564-3870.
Attention all Facebook users, you're invited to click Like WGTD for breaking news, photos, station program information, links to archives, and to interact with WGTD employees and listeners. The page is available to non-Facebook subscribers as well.
Support for WGTD comes from Andreas, proudly serving our Kenosha community since 1911. Visit our cafe for homemade soups, salads, and sandwiches. Go to andreasgifts.com to find out today's specials.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Hello, listeners. This is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters at 91.1 HD WGTD. And today we have a special guest with us today. Considering the things that are going on in Racine with the current district attorney, Rich Chiappetti is not seeking re-election after his four-year term. And so today we have Deputy District Attorney Patricia Hansen, and she plans to run as a Republican for the Racine County. She is from the town of Norway and has served as second in command of the district attorney's office for the past 4 years. And also, in between serving as a prosecutor, Hansen has worked for about 2 years in private practice, handling estate and trust. The married mother of two also has worked as a deputy family court commissioner. Welcome, Tricia.
Thank you, Marlo. I appreciate you having me here.
And it is a pleasure to have you here. There's a lot that we can be discussing, but why don't we first start with your interest in being district attorney, main district attorney, after being second in command. So tell me, what is the interest that you find in this? Because I'm sure it has to be a daunting task.
You are absolutely correct. And I have days where I think, did I really want this job? When I graduated from law school in 1995, mm-hmm. I went to work the day after they swore me in as a lawyer at the Racine DA's office.
Okay.
And as you know, because we went to school together,
yes,
I'm a Racine girl all the way through. I've been raised in Racine. My family is all in Racine. And it's a place that means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew when I came out of law school and this was the kind of work I was interested in doing, that this was a way I could really serve my community, because I know how great Racine is.
Mm-hmm.
And I know about the opportunities and possibilities that exist there. And I think that this has been my calling. This has been my way to serve. I did leave mm-hmm. after my son was born. I thought, okay, well, let's try private practice. Maybe it's more flexible,
right.
You know, because I was wanting to be a mom.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I couldn't be away. Mm-hmm. I missed it, and I missed the courtroom, and I missed the work that I had been doing, and I was lucky to have the opportunity to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there ever since, and I want to continue to serve the people of Racine County.
Well, that is good. That is really good. And a dynamic and very involved district attorney is something that Racine, I believe, will definitely need. Wisconsin is kind of special in its own rights, period, and Racine, as its little subset of Wisconsin, has its own set of problems. But most recently, we've had a large epidemic with the heroin addiction and that whole just piece of the issues that are going on with regards to addiction and substance abuse, period. And as a substance abuse counselor, it's something that is dear to me at heart. But when it comes to prosecuting individuals, and there is this issue with addiction, how do you address that from your perspective of it's something that is definitely needing to be addressed from a medical perspective, but from a DA's perspective, how do you, kind of work around that with your own maybe concerns with it being an epidemic, period?
You've hit a subject that's probably the most important on my list of priorities for Racine County.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you recall, but about 3 years ago, Sheriff Schmaling put together a series of heroin summits that
yes.
we held across the county. And it was in May of 2013. And in March of 2013, I lost someone that I cared about tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
My first cousin could not overcome his addiction issues mm-hmm. and overdosed on heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And when the sheriff came to me and said, would you consider being a part of our summit?
Mm-hmm.
Bringing a different perspective to it than just a professional, but your own personal story. I was very reluctant because it was very recent and it was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
My family had suffered a tremendous loss, and I had been involved with my cousin along the way, attempting to get him the services that I knew he needed. And even being the deputy district attorney and
mm-hmm.
knowing what programs are available wasn't enough to help him overcome that physical addiction that he ended up having
mm-hmm.
with opiates.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it my mission, and I even gave a eulogy at his funeral and said, if we learn nothing from this, it's that we have to reach out and help one another.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to communicate these issues, and you have to find help.
Mm-hmm.
You can't handle this problem
alone.
That is
true.
So ever since then, I have made it my mission to know as much as I can about addiction. And I have a very different perspective than I did 20 years ago when I started at the DA's office.
Mm.
So I have a three-part plan for addressing these opiate issues, because as Sheriff Schmaling always says, and I go to plenty of places with him to talk
right.
to different service groups and church groups to say, here's what's going on in our own community. Be
mm-hmm.
aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
We bring photos of heroin. Most folks have no idea what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find some, we want you to know what it is.
Yeah.
But Sheriff Schmaling always says, we can't arrest our way out of this problem. And he is absolutely right. You can arrest an addict all day long, and it's not going to fix the problem. So my three-part solution for this, and some of it I've already been able to put in place as the deputy, but my first part of the plan is to provide education to first-time drug offenders.
Mm-hmm.
Kids that come in, or even adults who come in on a first-time marijuana charge, I'm sure as you well know that I am of the opinion that marijuana can be a gateway drug. Most people don't try heroin for the first time.
That is true.
So in my mind, what we need to do is provide, rather than convicting young people of possession of marijuana and fining them or making them, giving them an ordinance violation and having them pay a fine, I would rather send them over to a program to give them some education and some background about how to make better choices and why this might not be the best choice for you.
Right.
So I think we created this program, and it's the acronym is TASC, THC Alternative Solution Class. And the first one started this week, so I'm real proud of that. We had five participants this week, four or five. And basically it's a 12-hour class that young
mm-hmm.
people go to, and it's really just a self journey about why you made this choice and how you can maybe make a better choice.
Okay.
And if you complete the class successfully, Behavioral Health Services reports that back to us, and then we dismiss the charge.
Okay.
So it's a pass on your first one, first marijuana charge.
It seems like the concepts to that is kind of like the same concepts surrounding like the drug court that is, giving users as well as some dealers a second chance with more low-level type of crimes. However, when it comes to minorities, ethnic minorities, and people of color, when it comes to deciding or having them participate in things like that, it doesn't seem to really be as fair and balanced. I work for Department of Corrections, and there are definitely more minorities that are incarcerated for more minor crimes, whether it is possession of cocaine compared to a Caucasian or someone of a non-minority ethnic group. How do you plan on being fair and balanced with regards to that? Because that also is an issue. It doesn't seem like there just seems to be a disparity with regards to charges for minorities, even though something like that in educating individuals will definitely benefit the community at large. How do you plan on being fair and balanced on the issues, period, with regards to that, if you were to become DA?
Well, as it relates to addiction.
Yes.
Because we'll finish that topic, and then I certainly want to talk with you more about the bigger picture of incarcerated individuals in Wisconsin.
All right.
The second part of my plan is for people who we already know are addicted. And what I started this summer, as recently as the 1st of August, is every single person arrested with an opiate.
Mm-hmm.
My staff refers those cases to our drug treatment court.
Okay.
And are you familiar with treatment courts yourself?
Yes, yes.
I'll tell you, 10 years ago when this idea came to fruition, I thought, come on, you know, we're going to clap for people and hand out incentives like movie tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, I am a total convert. It works. High-risk, high-need individuals respond to this treatment plan, and it's evidence-based treatment.
Yes.
So we're not just shooting into the dark hoping that this works. So regardless of race or age or gender, I have instructed my staff, and they have begun to refer every single person. So if you have oxycodone in your pocket, if you have heroin and a drug kit to actually IV use heroin,
mm-hmm.
you get to go to the drug treatment court. And I'm also put myself into the treatment court team. I've made a move. I've been 3 years now on the Veterans Treatment Court, and, you know, that's a specific pool of individuals. But I've moved over to the drug treatment court primarily because what we find is that people charged with dealing heroin aren't always dealers.
Okay.
A lot of those folks are just sharing to get by. They're sharing to use. They give some to their friends so that they themselves can afford to buy the drugs that they need physically because of their addiction.
So that's what you have found in the population in which you've served in the drug court?
Yes.
Okay.
So the old rule was no dealers in drug court.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there's a logic behind that. I don't want a new customer base for a drug dealer. I don't want to put them in there in my treatment court.
Right.
However, what I'm finding is that sometimes people they're charged with delivering to another individual are not necessarily predatory drug dealers looking to make money off of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're referring even those people who are just sharing to use to that drug treatment court. And we have 50 spots available.
Okay.
And in the past, some of those spots were taken up by, you know, folks who were addicted to marijuana or who were addicted to other drugs. I'm trying to keep it really cocaine-based drugs and opiate-based drugs because no one's died that I know of in the last 21 years in Racine County from smoking marijuana.
Except that it is a gateway drug, and we know that.
Absolutely.
So if you start at that area, then it wouldn't. You're hoping to prevent it from...
That's right. I want to prevent them from ever getting
exactly,
to that
point. Exactly, being a little bit more proactive.
Our treatment court is our best option for opiate-addicted people.
Okay.
And I want those spots to be saved for the people that I know we have to do something for today, right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second phase, and I think it's working well. The third phase is that if you are a predatory drug dealer in Racine County, that you should know that we will be seeking long prison terms for you. Because if you're going to make money on other people being addicted to those drugs, we have to remove you from the community because you're dangerous. So those are really the three parts to my plan.
Education, addiction, then long prison terms?
For predatory dealers.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Not for people selling a few bags of marijuana on the corner. I'm talking about heroin dealers, cocaine dealers. A gentleman was arrested in Racine County yesterday with over 60 grams of cocaine and no indications that he was a user.
Okay.
He's out there to make a buck off of other people's addictions, and that's dangerous.
Okay.
But the person who shares with their drug buddy isn't necessarily the danger to everyone else as they are to themselves.
Okay.
And so when I say things like public safety are important to me, that includes people who are addicts, because I want to help you be better. I want to help you be safe from your own vices. And, you know, the more productive people are, the better off society is. And even smoking marijuana is can make people unproductive. They don't want to work. They don't want to get out of bed. And I don't want that for folks in Racine County. We have a young man in the drug treatment court right now, and I told him last week that I've been talking about him all over town. And he laughed. He thought that was funny. But he started off in the treatment court, and he was getting high every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, every day. And coming to drug treatment court didn't change that for him. He was still getting high. And we've said to him, you know, you have to go to workforce and find out if there's jobs open. Do something for yourself. And I'll tell you what, we got that young man a job, or he got himself a job. I'm not even going to take credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
We motivated him to get a job, and he's like a new person. Every time he comes into court now, we high five, and I tell him I'm so proud of him because look at him. He doesn't need it anymore. He doesn't need to get high anymore. And he's proof that it can work.
Well, I know that we have had individuals from the drug court actually speak and kind of talk about that in the past. And again, I'm going to kind of go back to what I had discussed a little bit earlier. There still seems to be there isn't enough balance as far as our prisons have a high majority of incarcerated people of color. But given the opportunity in things like drug court, there's actually a very low percentage of individuals of color being able to participate in things like the drug court or things that will give them a second chance, compared to how many individuals are actually having contact with police or being charged or actually incarcerated. Matter of fact, Wisconsin as a whole has the largest incarceration of African Americans in the nation. And so how would you, in your position, if you get the position, how would you rectify that? How would you balance that out so that it would seem to be more fair? Because it's definitely disproportionate.
I've seen those numbers, and I know exactly what you're talking about. So I have a couple of ideas about how that happens. First of all, I think a lot of incarcerated individuals that are there because of drugs, we're going to look at that in a new way in Racine County, as I've already described.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to do, and I've spent the better part of today actually working on this, is I'm going to establish a district attorney's office leadership advisory council. And that's going to consist of clergy members, leaders in the African-American community, leaders in the Hispanic community, leaders in the white community.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to meet with them regularly and have an open door policy to say, what's going on in your community that we can try to help you with? Because I think particularly in Racine County, young men between the ages of about 17 and 25, and particularly young men of color, find that there is a gap in opportunity.
Okay.
I can't say, you know, when I get paperwork in the morning from people who have been arrested the night before, I don't look at that paperwork and say, well, this one's black and this one's white, so I'm not going to charge somebody.
Mm-hmm.
We charge the crimes that are brought to us, and I have an ethical duty to only prosecute cases that I think are legitimate.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So for me, I want to know why these young men are committing the crimes that they're committing. I think we have to get back to the root of the problem. And by engaging community leaders, I want to be able to work towards solutions for that problem.
Okay.
An idea that I shared with some pastors I met with today was that when I get a young person of any color, but particularly young men of color in Racine County, because I think that's where we're really falling down on the job, is we have a new workforce solutions center. You know, for years we've called it workforce development.
Yes, yes.
And Jonathan Delagrave, as the county executive, has reformed that whole agency. It's called Workforce Solutions now. And when you go to Workforce Solutions, they will do an assessment with you. What are your strengths? What are your needs? What education do you need? What are you interested in, and what might be a good career for you? So I would like to see us taking young people who have committed misdemeanor crimes, and not crimes of violence. I have to treat violence differently. And
that's understandable.
And for obvious reasons. But I want to take young people and say to them, I know that you stole something at Shopko, or you gave the police a false name.
Mm-hmm.
If you go over to Workforce Solutions and you do the assessment with them and at least hear what they have to say, might be out there for you, I'm going to give you a break.
Hmm.
bring your assessment back to court, show me that you completed it, and at least you'll know what options are out there, what options are available to you, specific to you, because we also have to understand that resources are scarce. And I can't I can't create a new program because there's just no money.
Right.
So I have to find what's out there and how I can use the leverage that a criminal charge might have to get someone to better themselves. And okay. I want to be able to use what we have in place because I think there's good programs out there. Sometimes it's just leading people to the right place. Yeah. And so if I can force a young person to go to get a better deal, I got no problem with that. I have no problem with that.
Well, I like those kind of new concepts and new ideas. Are there anything else that you might would change, but specifically within the first 6 months? What are some things that you would implement within the first 6 months that you think would definitely benefit the Racine community and that probably has not been implemented so far?
All right. Well, the first thing I want to do is the Leadership Advisory Council.
Okay.
And I sort of touched on that, but I think that's critical. I think we need to get the community involved in the conversation. You know, obviously there are going to be cases where people get hurt or mm-hmm. there are serious crimes committed, but that's going to have to be my job, and I'm going to have to take that weight on and you know, prosecute that case to the fullest extent.
Right.
But when we're talking about these minor crimes, we need to get everybody involved in that conversation because I can't do this by myself.
Right.
And I know that we have a really good infrastructure of community policing, and Chief Howell actually has a tremendous idea to expand that into our schools.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we need to do in our community is change the level of trust between law enforcement and the citizens.
I would agree.
You know, the media, I think, you know, has its own agenda at times, and I think we don't all have good information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the Leadership Advisor Council would be so important, because I want folks to not say, well, so-and-so got charged with this, and so-and-so went to prison. Let's get the facts. Let's talk about real, solid facts instead of what we might read in the newspaper or hear on TV. So I want to make sure that there's an open dialogue and that my door is open. So if you're seeing a problem, if you see a pattern, if you see something going on in your own community, let us know about it. And if there's something we can do, we're there to help.
Well, I love the idea of you saying that implementing programs that are going to work with other entities in Racine, working with the police, hopefully working with judges, working with Department of Corrections. And I think the media can either strengthen processes like that or maybe even skew it to mean something negative. The concept of Black Lives Matter, I think that that concept is driven in the hopes that African Americans and minorities overall will have a better relationship with police so that fear and intimidation isn't the first thing that comes to mind when there is that relationship. What are your thoughts about that concept overall?
I couldn't agree with you more that it is about fear and intimidation, and I think we need to break through some of that to get to a point where everybody trusts each other, because we're all in this about public safety.
Mm-hmm.
Public safety means to me taking care of our community as a whole.
Right.
And I know that, you know, there are law enforcement officers out there who are doing unbelievable
work. Most definitely.
In the neighborhoods.
Most definitely.
Just today I had someone say to me, how are things out on Jacato Drive? And I said, there is no more Jacato Drive.
It actually is better than it's been.
And it's Anthony Lane now.
All right.
We have a new name. And that COP house is so active. And we have new landlords in those apartment buildings. And oh, I was speaking with Pastor Woods, who's the chaplain at the police department. His
mm-hmm.
church is very nearby there. And he would tell me about what they used to have to do for kids at when school would start, because no one had school supplies, and their outreach into that community. And I think all of us working together, that partnership has totally revitalized that neighborhood. And if you went there today, it's unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, you could have called it New Jack City. Like the
Absolutely,
movie.
Yes, and I think that that's what some people did call
it. Yeah, that could be, But it was a scary place,
yes,
and it was scary for anyone, any you know, law-abiding citizen trying to raise their family.
Right.
And it's not that way anymore. And those apartments are beautiful. They've been remodeled, and they're very active at their COP house. And the direct Department of Corrections is right there in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And all of the DOC agents are there serving food at neighborhood night out and engaging with the kids. And it's a change of a neighborhood that I think is an obvious solution to some of these problems we're talking about. So I'd like to see us participating more in, you know, the city participating more in our community policing, because Chief Howell's done a tremendous job with that. And his plans to expand that into the schools by promoting Lieutenant Days, now Chief Days,
yes,
is a good first step. And having police officers in the schools that the kids know and trust, someone they can go to when they have a problem without fear of being arrested, someone they can go to when they want to share their successes. I want law enforcement to be those people, and I think that will ultimately change attitudes. You know, there are folks that are our age who are going to feel that way maybe forever, feel the way they do now forever.
Right.
But we need to change how the next generation feels about law enforcement and their relationship. And I think Racina's really doing a great job.
And it is. And it is. Again, listeners, this is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters. And we have Tricia Hansen with us, who is Deputy District Attorney of the Racine County, and who's also running for the District Attorney's Office this November. Again, Patricia, thank you for being here. We have discussed a couple of things: Black Lives Matter, drug treatment court, disproportionate number of mass incarcerations for minorities. Something else that I'd like to talk to you about, can you kind of explain how you've talked a little bit about evidence-based kind of decision makings with regards to how it may guide some of the way that you prosecute? Can you explain how you think that some of our that this will be expanded or continued under your watch if you become district attorney?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think we've learned over the years that what we thought worked at one time wasn't necessarily the answer. Mm-hmm. And that's why the trend really in any kind of treatment, whether it's ADA treatment, anger management kind of treatment, is really turning to evidence-based. And it's hard to argue with evidence-based treatment
<It is. laughs>
because there's the results and you see it. And like I told you earlier, I was not a believer of the treatment courts, but it's evidence-based. And I'll tell you what, I've seen it work now. So for me, when there is a new trend or a new idea that has evidence-based results, I'm going to be open to that, because now I understand how well that works and how successful that can be. So it'll sort of depend on the program.
Okay.
One of the other things I'd like to see happen very quickly, yesterday, in fact,
all right,
is Racine County is ready for a mental health diversion program.
Speak on that.
We have a lot of folks who suffer from mental illness but don't reach that critical stage that allows them to be committed.
Yes.
And committed beds for commitments are getting fewer and fewer.
And they are, and prisons are becoming more and more that way to house them, and it's not
It doesn't the work.
Best.
It yes. doesn't work. Yes. But at 3:00 in the morning, when someone who's not on their meds or maybe drinking alcohol,
yes,
and they're acting up and they're, you know, people are calling the police take them to the hospital, they don't get committed, so what are they going to do now? They can't return them back to the scene of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They end up in our jail. And no one will tell you that the jail is the best place for these folks. They decompensate quickly. They frequently don't come with their medication.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bad situation all the way around. So what we'd like to see happen, and again, it's going to be a matter of resources.
Right.
You know, if I could wave my magic wand, we'd be doing all the stuff we need to do. But unfortunately, no one's given me one of those yet. So what I'd like to see happen, and what Jonathan Delagrave is also committed to doing, and we're really fortunate that him as county executive now had come out of the Human Services Department. He used to run it, and he gets what we're talking about. He gets the need. We'd like to have a program in place where we screen out those with mental illness in the morning, you know, those nonviolent offenders, those nuisance offenders, and screen them out to a diversion program that puts them in touch with a case manager who helps them get back on track, who helps them remember to take their medications. You know, it's very cyclical. When you're mentally ill, then you feel better, you don't like the medicine, so you don't take it, and then you decompensate and you need your medicine again. Mm-hmm. We want to get those people hooked up with a case manager and perhaps supervise them through the court system, but not with charging them. Court is even a very anxiety-driven, stressful situation,
right.
Even if it's a disorderly conduct charge where there's not a lot at stake. Mentally ill people don't do well having to come to court under those circumstances. So I'd like to see us try to divert some of those kind of offenders into a program that really tries to address their mental health needs, because the jail isn't the place to do it.
Right.
And really, in all honesty, neither is DOC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I get somebody who I know is mentally, who I know is bipolar or schizophrenic, I can put them on probation, but you don't have the resources at DOC to really address their needs.
Correct.
And they're going to be a low-risk offender who sees their agent about once a month and checks on how you're doing, are you taking your medicine, and that's not enough.
That's not enough.
It's not what folks need.
Yeah.
So we have the movement is there. I think we have the right parties on board, and it's going to require the district attorney to give up some discretion. I'm going to have to give up discretion on charging some of these cases.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do that.
Are you?
It's the better good. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Now, when someone's violent or hurt someone, you know, I got to approach that differently. Or they are ready to hurt themselves.
Right.
But there's, you know, ways we can do that that I think better lend itself to their mental health needs. And fortunately, we are in, I think, the right place at the right time to make that happen.
All right.
So we'll see.
Okay. I think that one thing that'll definitely help with that is making sure that relationships are developed, partnerships are developed, whether it is partnerships, again, with the police or with Department of Corrections or with other prosecutors and definitely judges. But considering relationships, what are your relationships like with the 10 judges that are currently on the bench?
You know what? I've practiced in front of all of them because I've been here so long, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I think we have a good working relationship with them. I think that they know that the district attorney's office is, you know, doing the best we can with the resources we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we, you know, try to foster a good relationship, a credible relationship. You know, obviously they are there as the neutral magistrate. They're not here to be on our team or on our side.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to be credible and upfront and forward with them. And I think I personally have a good relationship with all 10 of the judges in a way that I can approach them and say, hey, I got this new program I want to try. Are you up for it?
Okay.
When I started the task program, it did require me to go to Judge Torhorst and Judge Boyle and say, are you okay if I dismiss these marijuana cases? Because ultimately, you know, the judge is the one who decides. So for me, a working relationship with them is always a good thing, but certainly from their neutral perspective, you know, they're in a place where I think they want to help, but it's they're not going to be on the same team as I am.
Respectful relationship.
Absolutely.
All right.
And I have an outstanding relationship with all the law enforcement chiefs in the county. From Burlington to Racine, Art Howell and I have worked for many years together. He and I share a lot of the same goals, both being from Racine and growing up in Racine. I think we both understand, you know, what we can accomplish, what the limits are, but what the goals could be and the potential that's out there. So I look forward to continuing those relationships.
Awesome. Currently, about half of the prosecutions from the district attorney's office are of people that are of Black or brown minority descent. However, none of the attorneys from the district attorney's office is of ethnic minority. What are your thoughts about this? And do you think that there should be some type of undertaking to hire a more balanced perspective on that? And if so, why and how would you advocate for that if you became DA?
Well, I'll tell you, having been involved in the hiring process for the last 4 years now, I would love to have a more diversified staff.
Okay.
And we even include sometimes when we put out a posting that we're looking for an attorney, we'd like someone who speaks Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Just for selfish reasons, to be able to communicate better. Because there are days where I go, oh, you know, I don't speak Spanish. Here's the trouble that I find that we generally face, mm-hmm. and the trouble we've even had with attorney retention,
okay.
is I can't pay young people coming out of law school what big law firms or corporations can pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I advertise a position, and we started about $50,000 at the district attorney's office, and I have folks who have been with us 10 years
uh-huh.
and aren't too much higher than that, it's hard to lure people into that public service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I can change. That's coming out. We are actually state employees, even though we work for Racine County. So that's coming out of the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
And again, resources are scarce there too. So,
yeah.
And
I would know, I work for Department of Corrections. And
oh, you know.
It's a problem. Scarce, yeah.
So while I encourage and try to recruit folks who better represent the population, I find that we're just not successful because other mm-hmm. people offer good hires more money.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that difficulty. And that's not even just at my office. That's at our public defender's office. That's across the board, I think, for attorneys in Racine County. Yeah, I agree with you. I would love to see us be more diverse, but I just don't get anybody who's interested.
Mm. Well, it's interesting.
You know, when the big law firms can hire you for $150,000 and I can only offer you $50,000, it makes it hard to compete.
Yeah, and that's interesting with regards to that in the hiring process and just getting individuals to be interested. But if there's a high retention there, that means that there is some turnover. You are getting attorneys.
No, but we're having high turnover.
Yeah.
Because I can't pay that either. You know, once you have your student loans and a couple of kids, $50,000
is rough. So the attorneys that are coming except that they're not diverse.
No.
So how do you get the pool of candidates that you select from more diversified, period? Because I think that it would benefit
no doubt.
The community.
No doubt in my mind that would benefit the community.
Yeah.
So that's I wonder if maybe recruiting on campus more, you know, getting to people earlier, maybe that's something that would work. You know, I'm open to suggestions because I think that's definitely true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for folks who are charged with crimes to see diversity when they come into court.
Right.
You know,
right.
You need to see people that look like you.
I think that there may even be a little bit more empathy with regards to balanced and, just balanced prosecution, perhaps. Because as we spoke about earlier, Racine and Wisconsin, period, has a problem compared to other cities and states across the nation. Mass incarceration of minorities, especially African Americans. So something to work with that. And there's definitely evidence-based guidelines and suggestions that show that if there is some balance with regards to the individuals that see people in positions of authority that are like them, there can be a strive to do something different and make some changes. And so,
I don't know. I totally agree. I mean, I think that goes to race, that goes to age. You know, there are absolutely likenesses that you have to exploit.
I agree.
To encourage people to be better.
I agree.
I'm sure that there are plenty of kids who I talk to on a weekly basis who say, who's that old lady trying to tell me what to do? because I'm not young. I'm not of the same color as they are. But, you know, I would love to have a bigger pool.
All right.
Love to have a bigger pool. So if you know anyone, send
well,
them my
I will,
way.
I will keep it in mind. I will keep it in mind. So now you started, you had some time in private practice, and then you came.
Well, first I was an assistant district attorney.
Okay.
So I did that from 1995 until 2001. And I left in October of 2001. And by June of 2003, I was back. So, you know, I enjoyed it. I did a lot of estate planning, so planning out, you know, wills and power of attorney for health care. And, but I just wasn't happy doing it. And I knew
right.
I couldn't be a good mom if I wasn't balanced in my work in terms of my job satisfaction.
Okay.
I needed to be happy at work to be happy at home. And we've made it work. I mean, my kids understand. Mom's in trial. Got to leave her alone tonight. You know, they know. They know what the signs are. But it's just my calling. I went to law school. I thought I was going to be a labor attorney.
Oh, really?
And be a sports agent. Like, I was totally convinced. And then I took this evidence class with Professor Dan Blinka. And I was like, oh, my gosh. He was a former prosecutor. And he had all these great stories and how much, you know, the kind of trials he had done. And I thought, I got to get in the courtroom. This is where I need to be. And so when I was a third-year law student, I went down to Racine, where I was from, and said, hey, I work for free if you'll take me. So I was an intern for 6 months because I didn't have any money to pay me, and got some experience, did my first trial. It was very exciting, and someone just happened to have a baby the same day I graduated. So I was able to fill in for some maternity leave and kind of piece it together until a job opened, and then I was hired.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so, I haven't looked back.
So you are one of two individuals that are vying for the position. What do you think is your main strength that would make you possibly a better district attorney?
My main strength is that I'm from Racine.
All right.
And I know who the players are. I know which nonprofit organizations are out there ready to collaborate with us. I know where the resources are and how to best use them. Mm-hmm. I know who the players are in terms of getting things done. You know, there's always people who talk and there's people who do.
All right.
And I'm a doer. Okay. And I want to connect with other doers to accomplish these goals that I've set for myself. And once we've done that, then we move on to the next set of goals and figure out what else we can do to help. So I think my knowledge base of Racine, growing up there, knowing how Racine has changed. You know, when I was a young child, manufacturing was still huge in Racine, and there were a lot more jobs, and people were more satisfied, and that has changed, and that's changed significantly and impacted tremendously, I think, what happens in the criminal justice system based on, you know, loss of jobs and the economy changing.
Right.
I understand where that comes from. If you tell me that something happened at Giese School, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
I know what, you know, where places are, and I know a lot about the differences between the east end of Racine County and the west end of Racine County, because we have a very diverse population in terms of rural to urban, and it presents different challenges.
Okay.
And I've been dealing with those challenges for 20 years, and I want to continue to serve all of those populations to my ability, the best of my ability.
So do you think that your philosophy is more focused towards the art of decreasing the crime, getting the crime off the street, or is it more on the prosecuting period? And what I mean by, typically prosecutors have historically just kind of overcharged defendants just to get some type of plea so that they can have the charges and have the people arrested. What are your thoughts about that? Is it the crime and decreasing it, or is it just making sure that you have the numbers when it comes to, well, how many people have you prosecuted and how many people have, and that's the best way to serve the community? What's your thoughts on that as far as how you would be and how you have been since you are deputy district attorney?
I'm already there.
Yeah.
I take no pride in the number of people I've locked up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, some of the lowest moments in my career are after winning a big case where someone's life is lost and you can't bring that back.
Mm-hmm.
Families need justice, and I'm there to serve them and to get justice, but it doesn't restore anybody to where they were before the crime happened. So what I'd like to see us doing is not basing what we do on charges, but using charges to try and make somebody make better choices,
okay,
even if we have to force them to do that, and in turn preventing crime in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our office is, by the state standards, 8 lawyers short. We have 18 lawyers, and the state says we should have 8 more.
Okay.
Our caseloads are so high. I don't need more crimes. I don't need more charges, and nobody in the office gets rewarded for how many charges they can put out there. We get rewarded for doing the right thing. And I want to instill in them my understanding of the community, my empathy towards these young people who are making bad decisions, so that we can try to serve the public that we're there for rather than lock people up, because that doesn't benefit anybody in the long run. Mm-hmm. I can count on one hand the number of defendants that I've prosecuted who were truly without a soul and belonged in prison forever.
Okay.
There aren't many people like that, because everyone is someone's child, someone's sibling, someone's spouse. And we have to think about that humanity when we're prosecuting people. But on the other hand, we also have to take into consideration the fact that victims have needs as well. Mm-hmm. And we have to be there to protect the community and help victims restore what they've lost as a result of crime. So it's a fine and delicate balance, but I think it's one that I'm ready to take on. And I think it's one that I understand, and I'm prepared to try to meet both of those goals that you just described in a way that's positive for Racine.
All right. Well, Tricia Hansen, again, listeners, is running for Racine County District Attorney, and elections is in November. And Patricia, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you again. And listeners, please stay tuned for our next Community Matters segment. Thank you.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online